Hi, this is Sarah. If you like this episode of Let's Talk About Sects, you can listen to my audiobook, Do As I Say, How Cults Control, Why We Join Them, and What They Teach Us About Bullying, Abuse and Coercion. The audiobook will be available on Audible, Apple Books, Google and Kobo from the 28th of June. A link is in the show notes.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Carly McConkie was a 21-year-old university graduate when she decided to attend the Mind Body Spirit Festival in Sydney and came across the stand for life integration programs. The course they offered sounded exactly like what she needed to get her life on track and realize her potential. Little did she know that this encounter was the start of a 13-year ordeal that would see her estranged from her family, under continued financial stress, a victim and perpetrator of physical assault, working untold hours of unpaid labour, and eventually medically sterilised. Welcome to Let's Talk About Sects, a podcast about cults around the world. I'm your host, Sarah Steele. Before we get into today's episode, I want to introduce you quickly to another podcaster based in Ireland called William Campbell, who's going to tell you a little bit about his show, Challenging Opinions.
Well, Challenging Opinions is a podcast that tries very hard not to fall into the trap of siloed media where people are only talking to people they agree with and only listening to people they agree with. Challenging Opinions tries to talk to everybody. It doesn't matter whether you're left or right. Doesn't matter whether you're an evangelical Christian or a devout atheist. We try to listen to what people are saying and challenge what they're saying. Explore their ideas to understand them better and also to find out if there are any flaws in those ideas.
And where can you find it?
You can just go to challengingopinions.com or you can search Challenging Opinions on any of the major podcast platforms.
I must admit I found a couple of his guests quite challenging to listen to, but I agree with William that getting outside your bubble is a worthwhile thing to do when you can handle it. Now back to sects. This episode, I'm speaking in depth with Carly McConkie, who self-published her memoir, The Cult Effect, in July last year. Carly spent 13 years with a group that's been called a cult by many, and we'll cover the definitions of a cult that we use for this podcast during the discussion. Before we continue, a content warning. This podcast will deal with issues that some people may find disturbing, such as manipulative behaviours and physical assault, including of minors. There's also a little coarse language. Please use your discretion as to whether this will be suitable for you and those around you who may be listening too. I also need to add that the views and opinions expressed in this episode include those personal to Carly, and while I have read a lot of material in order to try to verify what I can about her experiences, all of which are linked to on the podcast website, her views are her own and do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of the makers of this podcast. I met Carly late last year at the Cult Information and Family Support Christmas Gathering, which its founder, Roz Hodgkins, was kind enough to invite me along to. I'd been in touch with Roz after coming across a negative mention of KIFFs on the Kenja website for episode 4 of this podcast, so I'd wanted to go and find out more about the organisation I'd been referring cult survivors to on the show. Carly and her mother, Robin, were both at the gathering and spoke about their experiences to the other attendees. I found them to be very open and generous in sharing some difficult past life events. As the evening drew to a close, Carly gave me a copy of her book, which I read over the following weeks. As a reader, you can tell that Carly isn't a trained author, but her straightforward, timeline-based writing style provides an unflinchingly candid account of a very personal and painful ordeal that overtook her life for more than a decade. For someone like me with an interest in organisations that resemble the one Carly became involved with, it's riveting reading. Carly was associated with a group that resembled Kenja in some ways, in that it was more self-help based than religion based, and resembled some of the other groups we've covered so far in the podcast in other ways, including a belief in a form of a coming Armageddon. When she first came across life integration programs, Carly was in that in-between period after university and before embarking on a career. She was tired, having worked very hard to get her degree. She'd put on some weight and was feeling a bit stuck, having moved back in with her parents in Sydney after studying in Bathurst, regional New South Wales.
So I guess I had just finished university and I was a bit lost. I'd done communication and majored in public relations. I'd done an internship at a PR firm and didn't really know whether I wanted to, work in that area. And I was feeling lost, needed some direction. So I did go to the Mind Body Spirit Festival and had a psychic reading. And I'd had one, I think, at university. And, you know, the person that gave me the reading was actually part of this cult. And she said, she told me about this program called The Next Evolutionary Step. So she gave me a brochure on The Next Evolutionary Step program. And it was a 4-page elaborate brochure that looked extremely professional, said that this particular managing director had taught over, 10,000 people or 12,000 people, and that I'd be, I'd find my direction, be healthier, more prosperous, all the things that you could ever imagine, and reach my potential. And I guess that's what I was looking for. I'd, finished university and I had so much want to succeed in my life.
Carly was intrigued and went right over to the stand to investigate further.
There was all these people there who looked extremely healthy and vibrant and happy, smiling, giving sort of little healings on the stand. And they were all, really motivated and told me about it, said it's the best thing you'll ever do. We were told that there was a free seminar at the Hilton Hotel. So there again, it seemed very professional. We went there and people got up and gave testimonials and said how the course had changed their lives. We were basically told that this one course would give us all the tools and processes that we'd need to be able to make changes in our lives.
The actual course was held at Macquarie University, which again gave Carly a good impression, and she signed up along with her mother and sister. The course was 5 nights and a 2-day weekend, and involved going on a vegan to vegetarian diet, meditations, music and dancing, exercise and rebirthing, which I had to look up, and is a series of breathwork techniques that was devised in the 70s. Carly found the whole experience joyful and positive.
And then right at the end, we were given a manual that told us about another 17 or so programs that if we wanted to reach our true potential and enlightenment and such, we needed to complete all of these.
As she had always been, through school and her tertiary studies, Carly was a perfectionist and says that from the start she was all in. From that very first program, she was on a trajectory and she knew she had to keep going.
From memory, my cult leader gave a summary of each course, and one of them was the survivors and that you would learn how to survive the changes of the planet. And then there was also one called the initiates, which seemed to be the peak of your enlightenment and evolvement. So I just knew that I had to do initiates and get there throughout this whole process.
In In terms of the learnings underpinning the development of these courses, it's not clear where the varied content and structure came from. The director of the courses had completed a bachelor degree.
Well, in her brochure, she basically said that she had completed a BA in applied science, and she said that she majored in alternative systems. Okay, that's the only qualification she gave. So we all took alternate systems as, okay, this seems pretty alternative.
But in fact, the major of her applied science degree was in agricultural science. Quoting directly from the course brochure for the Next Evolutionary Step program, in a section under Your Course Instructor, it says that her background includes a Bachelor of Applied Science that majored in alternate lifestyles and learning systems that concentrated on the principles of holism and the psychology of how we integrate into our world and the effect this has on our overall health and wealth. Since 1984, she has concentrated her efforts in the study of human development, potential, and healing. She has been guiding individuals and instructing groups in this area for over 11 years, and is successful without exception with those who wish to partake in gathering this knowledge and ability. Prior to creating life integration programs, she was the managing director of a national training organization specializing in life and work skills, an organization that has trained in excess of 12,000 people during those 7 years. End quote. According to LinkedIn, that organization was in hospitality and trained students in food and wine service. One of the LIP concepts Carly mentioned made me think of the process of detaching spirits that certain other groups practice.
The premise of these programs was that you cleanse your cellular memory, your cells of this lifetime, your ancestors, and also your past lives.
Carly says that she and the other attendees were told
it was, cutting edge, state of art, no one else was doing it on the planet, that type of thing.
And about the organization's managing director?
She, from the moment I guess even from the moment I was at the Mind Body Spirit Festival, you're told about this woman who seems like a guru. So the people around her who were already members were putting her on a pedestal to start off with. When I went to the Hilton Hotel and saw her up on stage, she was very slim, very fit person. She'd done aerobics and all that type of thing. She was always doing exercise and she hated the thought of being fat. She was extremely vain and she was extremely charismatic, and she held, the room so well and was able to talk off the cuff for hours and hours.
At the time Carly came across LIP in 1996, the programs were very successful. There were around 80 to 90 people on each course, and courses were being held in Sydney, Lismore, Coffs Harbour, on the Gold Coast, in Brisbane, and even South Africa. Carly's mother ended up taking a second course with Carly that she found to be too zany for her liking, while her sister stopped after the first course. Carly, however, soon moved on to the third, which is one of the most contentious. This course, called The Final Step, was a lot more demanding physically and mentally. About 80 people were attending this program, and everyone was given a list of items to bring, like a sleeping bag, clothes, and a chair.
When I started The Next Evolutionary Step in July 1996, I completed Universal Healing, which is about healing the planet and others with crystals and different tools. That was in September. And then in October, I did The Final Step, which was a week-long course. And that's where we met at Queensland University in Brisbane, which, again, seemingly professional. We met there and we were in a big... Before each program, we were always made to wait for at least 2 or 3 hours outside the course room, which built up our tension and anxiety before we even entered. And then when we got into the hall, we were told that everything that wasn't on that list was contraband.
Everything else was taken from them, including wallets, identification, and from Carly, expensive items she'd bought based on the physical component she'd experienced in the second course, like a torch and drink bottles. Then they were asked about the patterns each of them was looking to break, and had to stand up in front of the room full of strangers and talk about alcoholism, sex addiction, weight issues, or whatever their own motivation was for taking the course.
We weren't allowed to go to the toilet. We were told by the cult leader that we were only allowed to go to the toilet when she told us we could. So that was extremely debilitating for me, because I was a person who was always nervous and always went to the toilet, like a lot of women do anyway. And then we were led eventually to a blackened out coach bus that had black curtains all over it. And we were taken to a destination that would have been at least 10 to 12 hours away, it felt like, but it probably wasn't, because I know where it is. And it was a completely isolated property. We didn't know where we were. We had no ID, obviously no phones, things like that. And then we had to stand in lines in groups. We had the cult leader and support team members at the front of each group, and they were yelling and screaming at us, telling us to do push-ups, sit-ups, you know. We were told when we could go to the toilet, and you had time frames, things like that. And so the premise of the program was called The Final Step. You were only supposed to be able to go on it once, and it was all about bringing up your fears and moving through your fears and becoming unlimited.
To me, this brings up elements of a boot camp, and I don't mean just an intensive exercise regime, more of a small taste of the full-on US Marine-style boot camp. I understand that process to be about physical conditioning, but also about psychologically training people to act in very specific ways, as a unit and against some of their most natural instincts, including self-preservation, in order to do what their job requires of them. I'm unsure of what would make this beneficial in a self-help course.
So there was lots of horrible things that happened on there. Just a couple of examples, you know, we watched hardcore pornography, which I hadn't been exposed to. We were sleep deprived. We only had about 2 hours sleep per night. We were told at the end that I think it was only about 17 hours over the 7 nights and 8 days or something like that. And food deprived, you know, we weren't given meals for a while. And then, you know, some people, there was some cans of tomato soup left out, and some people went in, had some of the tomato soup, and I had like 2 sips or something. And then the cult leader came out and said, for those who had been good and not eaten the soup, they made a really nutritious, nourishing meal for them and gave it to them, and the rest had to just keep starving. So food deprivation, so sleep deprivation. Throughout the night, we were in this tarpaulin marquee and being lectured to about different things. And if you were tired and falling asleep, you had to hold a big rock over your head and stand at the side of the room. There was lots of meditations, chanting, things like that. Another bad thing was, we had to jump into a pond naked and stay in there until we were told we could get out, and we weren't allowed to go to the toilet in there or anything. And just one other horrific thing was we were told to get up on a stage naked, and we had to, you know, I was standing in front of 80 people in front of me. I was already very self-conscious about my body, and we had to tell the group what we liked and didn't like about ourselves, and then other people had to comment on our bodies. So all of these really destructive processes that completely annihilate your self-esteem and just put you in a space where you don't know what's going on. Your brain is just, and your body, had to exercise every day and things like that. So it was a complete breaking down process. We'd gone through all this hell, and then by the end of the week, we had this party where we, you know, had to bring gowns and good clothes and high heels, and we had this party function at a hotel on the way back, and we were all celebrating. And our cult leader told us that, you know, it was all about being unlimited, and that, you know, all the things you went through were going to take the next 12 months to process through and things like that.
In 1998, the organisation and its managing director were featured on A Current Affair.
There was about at least 6 ex-cult members who went on to A Current Affair and were discussing that she was a con artist, had conned them out of tens of thousands of dollars.
They also told the television program that the leader had referred to herself as the reincarnation of Jesus Christ, which journalist David Margan put to her, and she denied. The show included some secret footage captured of the Final Step program, in which you can hear reference to some of the things Carly talks about, such as people handing over all their personal belongings and having to hold rocks over their heads. In March of 1999, the Final Step program was featured in an article in the Sunday Mail entitled Camp Hell. This article corroborates many of the recollections Carly gave me of her experiences of the program, but it is no longer available on the newspaper's website, and I couldn't find a record of whether it was retracted or just removed by the publication.
That was probably one of the biggest programs that, you know, a lot of people never went back after that, or, you know, the gung-ho extreme people like myself who just knew that I had to keep going, just kept going. And, you know, I stepped onto the Personal Mastery and Metaphysical Counselling year-long course a year later, so...
It almost seems like that is like the one that's going to sort the devotees from...
Absolutely, definitely. There was always vocabulary from the cult leader talking about the weak and the strong. And, you know, after certain events happened, like the current affair program, you know, all the weak ones, they'll all leave and only the strong ones will keep going and, you know, evolve.
It was sometime after the bad press of the late 90s that Life Integration Programs changed its name to Survivor Principles, and soon after became Universal Knowledge. I asked Carly if she ended up doing all of the courses, and she said that there were only two or so that she didn't do, including an instructor's course that cost $14,000, and one about being successful in business that fell by the wayside somewhere along the way, so hadn't really been available to her. And the amount of money that she and her then-husband spent with LIP?
I think it was something between Michael and I, it was about $140,000. So I think it would have been about $44,000 or something we spent on courses. And then through my journey of working for my cult leader and her manipulating me and blaming me for situations, for instance, the... A Australian Taxation Office came in to investigate her, and I was doing her accounts at the time, and she made me sign a contract that I would pay her back $50,000 and said that I was responsible and it was all my fault, and that I'd, you know, it was after a current affair and her courses were only having about five people on them, but she blamed me for all of the derision of her whole business. And, you know, blamed me for the derision of all the future people that wouldn't be doing the next evolutionary step and evolving. So you can imagine how I felt about that. And so that $50,000, she ended up adding $20,000 to that for very ridiculous reasons. So it became $70,000. And then there was a period after where I organized a ski trip for her and her family. And she said that, you know, I didn't book breakfasts or I didn't book transfers, so I should pay for the whole trip. So I had to pay another $10,000. I'd just separated from my husband, or he'd run away by that point, and I was on the single mother's pension, had three children, and I had to pay her $500 a week, you know, to give her $10,000 for a ski trip she just went on.
Carly ended up working for the group both in the office doing things like accounts and on the property undertaking manual labour like building maintenance and gardening. This would be on top of whatever day job she had at the time, or while she was on government benefits. And she says that in a decade of work, at times 7 days a week, with only Christmas Day, New Year's Eve and Easter Sunday off, she was paid on a single occasion $5,000 in total. On top of the financial strain, things also often got physical.
She made out that we were expelling all of our own aggression and issues and things like that, but it was actually the process that was inducing all of that aggression and issues. In the book, I have been completely honest in, you know, a lot of areas that are confronting for people. You know, I did bash up, you know, my husband at one point after he originally bashed up me, etc. We were told by my cult leader, all of us were told to spank our children with wooden spoons because, you know, we needed to control them so that when they got older and bigger than us, we could still control them, that type of thing. So, you know, because, you know, we were told that by the person that we thought was pretty much Jesus Christ, come again. You know, we didn't think outside of that. We just completely did what we were told. It was like she was our parent and we followed her instructions. And, you know, obviously underneath, you know, there was a lot of doubts and just times when I was thinking, what am I doing and things like that. But, you know, you are taught to stop those thoughts and just keep going with.
Carly spoke to me about a psychological term called introjection, which is mentioned in a few journal articles I've come across alongside something called cult pseudo-personality, whereby members of a cult-like group take on certain behaviours that are expected of them in the group, but that are really in opposition to their core personality traits and ethics.
You take on the beliefs of your cult leader and take on their personality within yourself. And so all of these members of the cult are all acting the same, using the same language, constantly seeking the cult leader's approval and trying to copy how they act.
In spite of the promises of the programs, the reality of being a part of the group for Carly sounds like a pretty tough life of financial strain, peppered with emotional and physical rebukes.
When this cult leader was bashing me up, I was feeling like I deserved this and that because I, you know, didn't have any strong discipline when I was growing up, then now it was time for me to have it. It was like my payback and all that type of thing. So yeah, they're the types of things that were going on in my head, that I deserved it and that I, you know, I had a really bad personality and I needed to change, and she was the one helping me do that.
Carly relates the ways in which the group operated to some techniques utilised in other cults.
They use these coercive persuasion techniques like sleep deprivation, food deprivation, group intimidation, you know, isolation. So you've got all of these things that are creating the situation where, you know, I was on adrenaline the whole time and all of those around me, and you don't have time to think. So it's a group mentality that is hard for normal people to fathom, but, you know, once you're in there, you're not going to go against the whole group because you know you're going to get hurt. And my cult leader had the whole group around her supporting her. You know, if anyone ever gave their own opinion or something contrary to what she believed, she would just cut them down on the spot. And it was like, you know, the group would be sicking onto that person.
But there was some light within the darkness. And in her book, Carly talks about a course that she really enjoyed called The Survivors.
So The Survivors happened at a time where, you know, things were going well. I think it was about 2003. There must have been a lot of money happening. We were in her good books, etc. And so we went on this course and we went to, you know, a national park up in northern New South Wales, and it was beautiful. There was waterfalls. We camped outside. We'd had 1 week or so at the property where we were learning all about how to, you know, get water from trees overnight, condensation, etc., learning all of the survival tools. And then we'd gone away for this week to this national park. And I guess it was very much like the Aboriginal community is, you know, you're close to the land, you're part of a group, you're part of that tribe. And it felt like we all belonged and we were getting taught different things along the way. We were swimming in streams and under waterfalls, etc. And, you know, I'd never really been camping, that type of thing. So it was pretty much just out in nature where you're automatically on a high anyway. And, you know, we were asked what our job would be in survival, for instance. And I was I put myself forward as, you know, looking after children, etc. And so, you know, I think people are in cults because they've been looking for that purpose and meaning in their life. And this group, you feel like you've found that. And so on that course, I felt like, okay, all the shit and crap and everything else I've been through, you know, was leading up to something solid and something good. And that, you know, we would get through this survival and that, you know, we would be a team and it would be positive. So, yeah, I did enjoy that.
I think it was the moments like that that sort of maybe kept you going.
Absolutely, definitely. You know, no matter what, we did experience spiritual experiences on these courses. And, you know, you're meditating, we could have been chanting, we were dancing, we were on a vegan diet for at least a year and always vegetarian. And so I think you're on this natural high and, you know, no matter whether it was induced in our brain chemicals or whatever, but we felt like we were having spiritual experiences that we'd never had before. And that was definitely something we kept aiming for, you know, no matter what bad things happen along the way.
Because of her schedule, Carly already had a pretty diminished relationship with her parents during this whole period of her life. But she also says that members were actively encouraged to distance themselves from family. Looking over some of her old course records, she found a note.
Cut off from your parents. I wrote that on the back of the course folder.
Carly had borrowed money from her parents along the way for various courses when she couldn't afford them herself, and so wasn't completely cut off from her family for her first decade in the group, but says that her contact with them was pretty limited because she couldn't really talk about her life in any great depth with them, so it was difficult to connect.
Yeah, my parents learnt after a long time just to stop giving money to me because they realised that it was going straight to her.
Carly had been encouraged to focus a lot of blame for her supposed issues on her mother.
She turned all of us against our own mothers. You know, as I mentioned, she was our surrogate parent, and that was intentional. And, you know, she used to call my mum a bitch and that she was, you know, spiteful and all these type of things. And basically the premise that we were taught by our cult leader was that, you know, we were screwed up and that if we didn't want our children to be screwed up, then we had to get rid of our parents who had been the ones to make us screwed up. So mothers were definitely on the naughty list.
Once the money had stopped coming from that avenue, 1 year on a visit to Sydney, Carly found out that her mother had been receiving information from cult information and family support meetings. She immediately relayed this information back to the leader, who then told Carly that it was time to break off all contact with her parents. During this time, she missed the end of her beloved grandmother's life as well as her funeral. She sent flowers along in her stead, hating that she couldn't be there herself. Carly had 3 sons with her partner Michael during their time with LIP and then Universal Knowledge, whom she gushes about when you ask her about them. They're something she's most proud of in her life, and she's clearly a devoted mother. But when they were little, she had to stop breastfeeding them far too soon and hand them over to others to care for, just so that she could get all of the work done that was required of her around the property or in the office of the organisation. And while she wouldn't swap her sons for anything, she had always wanted a daughter as well. But it wasn't to be.
After each child, our cult leader would say to myself and another couple of girls that we were, you know, bad mothers, terrible mothers, abusive mothers, you know, we should never have been mothers, etc., and that we should get sterilised. And, you know, it got towards the end where it was about 2009, so about almost a year before I eventually escaped, that, you know, I thought, okay, well, it's time. You know, I was in a situation where I felt like I couldn't bring another child into the world and be in this environment. It was too hard. And I wanted to, yeah, get her approval, seek her approval. And so I decided to actually do it. And, yeah, the doctor said to me, you know, are you sure you want to do this? You've still got 10 years of fertility left and all this type of thing. And I said, no, it's fine. So that was extremely upsetting when I left to know, you know, I mean, I had 3 boys and I would have loved to have had a girl. And yeah, I guess, you know, just having had that right taken off me.
In episode 3, we talked a bit about how the sunk cost fallacy can play into a cult member's feelings of dedication to a group. And this certainly also seems to have been the case with Carly.
I think because I probably am an extreme person, and I was always hardworking as a child and as a student throughout high school and university, and I was a person who was always analysing myself, wanting to be better, and I kept doing that throughout this process. And it got to the stage, you know, 10 years later, 13 years later, where you have put in so much effort, so much hard work and pain that you don't want to give that up, you know, for the slight chance that you will finally reach it.
Carly did finally make it to the initiates, the course that she knew from the outset she was aiming for, that she had to complete from the time the first leaflet was put in her hand.
As I mentioned, the initiates, which was supposed to be the pinnacle of our involvement, was the course where, you know, by the end, I think that she just got so bored and lazy, too lazy to come up with anything different. And she literally just, yeah, left us in the course room on the carpet for what felt like 4 or 5 hours, just laying there. We weren't allowed to move or go to the toilet. And, yeah, so that was the initiates. I'm sure there was a little bit of, you know, lecturing in there from her, but that's pretty much what the pinnacle of our involvement was, not moving, being able to control our bodies and not go to the toilet. So it was pathetic. And we would have paid about $3,000 for that.
After so many years of involvement, some doubts were starting to seep in further than the previous ones had ever managed to. With 13 years of devotion behind her, it's almost hard to believe Carly did in the end manage to find a way to disengage. It took a lot to push her over the edge.
At the time of escape, whether it happened on the day I escaped or just after, it's that realization that what you're experiencing at this point in time is worse than death, because you're prepared to escape the cult and possibly die in 2 years' time. And, you know, even on the day I left, you know, I'd been, within the few days preceding, I'd been physically bashed up by my cult leader again. I was so weak and fragile that I knew I couldn't go through all of this trauma anymore. And she was calling me a con artist and telling me that I should be paying her even more money than I already was. And, you know, I'd been whippersnipping for 4 hours that morning out on the property, and when she told me to get back to work, I just physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually couldn't do it. Somehow I managed to make the decision to leave and pack my car and go and pick up my children. When I got to my ex-husband's work, you know, I was still in the sort of frame of mind, oh, you know, maybe I'll just be able to tell my cult leader, no, I'm going to work just during the day, not during the night, those type of things. I was playing over these arguments in my head and actions that I would take. But as soon as I saw my ex-husband, you know, within 5 minutes when I was in a safe environment, my brain just started filtering everything. It was like a light bulb moment where within 5 to 10 minutes, all of a sudden I realised, oh my God, that was a cult. She is a cult leader. And, you know, and that was that.
I talked to Carly about the three criteria that I use for the purpose of this podcast to define a cult and whether she thought they applied to her group. Firstly, a charismatic leader who closely controls their members, especially with regards to disengaging with the group and its ideology. I think we've covered the charismatic part, but in terms of control over leaving...
My cult leader, now as a registered psychologist, threatened that if I did leave, because I tried to leave one other night about 3 weeks before, that she would report me to DOCS, Department of Child Safety, and have my children taken away from me, because she was going to dob me in and say that I was an abusive mother and sign off on it as a psychologist.
Secondly, who thinks that they exclusively have access to the truth and the rest of the world is wrong. My impression is that the members, or at the very least Carly herself, believed that the end of the world was coming, and they were a select group who had access to the answers on how to survive it. And thirdly, that is highly secretive about the workings of their group to outsiders. About this, Carly says,
well, first of all, you're never told what's going to happen on a program because you're supposed to keep your logic at the door, catchphrase, and then at the end of the program, you're told not to tell people what's in the program. You're supposed to walk your talk. So, you know, people will just realize how amazing you are and how you look and all that type of thing, and they'll want to do the program. And I mean, obviously, if you're yelling and screaming or there's physical violence and things like that, and you know that that's not a part of normal society, you're told it's normal here in this environment, but you're not really going to go and tell anyone that that's happening. Like when I was bashed up, I never told anyone externally that that had happened.
Carly faced the problems with trying to bring the group and its leader to account that so many people face, in that there isn't really legislation in place that covers psychological manipulation or abuse. And she didn't have evidence of the physical abuse, which is covered by the law. She did attempt to bring her case to the attention of law enforcement.
So I went to the police at the end of 2010, or I think it was, and I took sort of, you know, a centimetre's worth of evidence, etc. I went into a police station, my local police station, and I told the constable on the desk all about it. And then he took all of my information and put it into less than a one-page report. So she was suing us by the time Gold Coast Police got back to me, and he basically called me and said that there's a civil suit going on at the moment. In other words, she was suing us for defamation and that they were dropping the case because, you know, they thought that, you know, one side was obviously lying and all that type of thing. So they completely dropped the case and didn't investigate further.
Later on, when she was taken to court by the group's leader.
To be honest, from the court case, I had a lot of, miraculously, when I retrieved only half of our belongings from our house, I managed to get so much evidence that was useful in the court case. I think I had about 345 items or something. And I was trying to tell our barrister and solicitors, I was trying to prove the psychological abuse, but they were only pretty much interested in the physical abuse. And then there wasn't much evidence for that. So, you know, I think we do need psychological abuse to become a criminal offence in all states in Australia. And it's not currently. And, you know, it's going to be difficult and it's going to be hard for people in the legal system to prove that or to discuss that. I mean, but, you know, there's criminals out in our community who are performing psychological abuse and really damaging so many people's lives.
I feel that this is an all too regular occurrence in personal relationships as well, where domestic violence can entail emotional as well as physical abuse. Carly found her experience made her understand these situations quite differently to how she might have thought of them previously.
You know, for instance, before I got into a cult situation, I would have thought, how can those women get into a domestic violence situation? But I can completely understand now.
Carly says that once she was out, she was lucky to have parents to go back to who had learned about cults, particularly her mother, who had been attending KIFS meetings for a few years and so didn't blame her for what she'd been through.
Yeah, I didn't speak to my parents for 3 years until I escaped. And then even when I escaped, I was still in the mentality that, you know, oh, I've just hurt my parents so much and done so many bad things to them that they wouldn't want to talk to me, that type of thing. And this is an important point because, you know, you might believe that, but for most people, their parents are, you know, are wanting to see you. They're completely supportive. Hopefully they've had education and, you know, they want to see you. So luckily, you know, I eventually called them. My ex-husband persuaded me to call them, and they were thrilled. They were crying on the phone. They were so happy. You know, they'd lost 3 years of complete disconnection with me and then, you know, 13 years of losing me, really. Because my parents had been going to the support group, Cold Information and Family Support, for at least sort of 3 to 4 years before I came out, they knew about cults and what they were. My mum had read so many books about cults, etc. So that really helped. No, I have been extremely lucky, and I'm extremely lucky that my 3 children came out with me and that my ex-husband was already out.
As well as this, Carly became involved with KIFFS herself, and a couple of months after leaving, she attended a conference they were involved with organising at Brisbane Parliament House.
There was 60 other cults represented there, you know, so 2 months after I left this destructive situation, I'm amongst people who have gone through very similar experiences. You know, the cult leaders all seem to work from the same handbook, and that really helped me. And, you know, there were psychologists out from the United States who had been in cults themselves and had been regularly counselling and helping other people.
Carly met the Fairfax journalist Michael Batchelard at this conference when she found herself sitting next to him at a dinner. In speaking about her experiences, Michael told her that if she ever felt up to it, he'd be very happy to cover her story in the high-profile newspapers he wrote for. Carly decided to go for it, and in preparing Michael for the story with copious notes, she found a sense of catharsis.
Within the next month, I sat down for about 4 days and I just purged out every single thing that happened to me. It was a completely raw and probably horrible manuscript to read for Michael, but, you know, that even helped me.
The resulting article was published in The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald, and subsequently Fairfax Media was sued alongside News Corp for another article in the Gold Coast Bulletin, as well as Carly and her ex-husband Michael, and the 2 journalists Michael Batchelard and Anne Louise Brown personally. Carly was fully prepared to defend the truth of everything in the article, and had to again relive her experiences over and over to ready herself for the court case. She thinks that this again helped her to work through all of the difficult things she'd been through over the preceding decade. While Carly feels that digging into her experiences and making the vow to herself to feel everything has helped her to get to the point she's at today, it hasn't been an easy road.
It takes so much time from once you leave a cult to actually recover. You know, I would say that I only started feeling normal literally about 7 years after I left, and it's only been about 8 years now.
There are many lasting effects that will never go away as well.
I'm okay now, but even like when I left, I would look at little babies and children. I still do, really. And I would get upset because I lost all of my, you know, the formative years of my own children. I couldn't be with them. You know, there were nights, even for my third child, that I wasn't home for like at least 12 months of his life before we left. He was alone at home, you know, in his crib, probably crying the whole night. And, you know, that has had a large impact on me because it just makes me sad whenever I see happy families, you know, when I'm at the beach or walking along in a shopping center, normal families, because I just never, ever had that opportunity. And, you know, I joke to people and say I'm looking forward to my grandchildren because it'll be the only chance that I get to, you know, hopefully the bond will be as strong, you know, with my grandchildren, that I will be able to give them everything and enjoy the time, which I didn't have with my own children.
Another lasting effect is the guilt for what her parents and her children went through, for which Carly has done a lot of work on forgiving herself and understanding the psychology of how it happened. And there were other aspects related to guilt too.
When you get out, you do have to grapple with so much guilt. I know another guy who said that he did certain programs because I was so positive and nice and, you know, convinced him to do it. And that's just the thing that's just so awful. And there's other people out there in other cults. I know that, you know, they got their family in or other people in and they're still in there. And that's the worst thing, you know. I mean, the worst thing is to still have your children in there, which so many people do, or their spouses, and they, you know, they can't save them.
I I asked Carly if she could think of any red flags that people should look out for when considering groups like this. She said that if you're told you only have to complete one course, but then at its conclusion there are many more courses, and it appears to be a STEP program, that can be a red flag. If the monetary investment seems to be excessive, and going to just the leadership, that can be a red flag. And about a group's leadership.
When people are putting this particular person at such on such a pedestal that is unrealistic, I definitely believe that if you want to reach enlightenment or meaning in your life, you talk to a lot of people, you read a lot of books, you take the golden thread from a lot of people and situations. You don't rely on one person. So if people are focusing on one person or one organization, and if they're spending so much time there and they're neglecting going out with their friends and their family, then that's a warning sign. If a person has ailments or ill health and that leader is, you know, telling them not to go to a general practitioner or a medical doctor, but, you know, they can heal them or just do their, you know, particular form of healing and that type of thing, or not to go to a psychologist or psychiatrist, you know, they're warning bells, because, you know, so many people in cults, you know, end up dying or becoming so ill because they're not seeking the right treatment because this cult leader is telling them not to.
While Carly's ex-leader isn't currently running any more courses or leading any more groups that Carly is aware of, she does fear that there's nothing stopping her from trying to do so again in the future.
It's like a lot of other cult leaders, you know, they go to jail and their cult members are still brainwashed and keep believing them. And when they come out, they just resume being a cult leader. And, you know, who else is going to help us if it's not our government? You know, they have a large role to play. And if they don't take action, they are responsible for cult leaders continuing to remain at large.
I find Carly to be remarkably brave in having self-published a book about her experiences. She has already had to face the leader of this group in court once, when she was sued for defamation alongside Fairfax Media and News Corp, where she and her ex-husband Michael represented themselves in the case. That matter was settled, with judgment eventually being made in favour of Carly and the other defendants. And while Fairfax and News Corp agreed to take down the articles in question to get the settlement done, they did not have to agree to any retractions. In that case, Justice Jean Dalton said of the plaintiff, quote, "I found her evidence deliberately prevaricating and at times demonstrably untrue." Journalist Michael Batchelard published a follow-up article in the Sydney Morning Herald in October 2013. Quote, "Defamation law, in the hands of a highly determined and litigious individual, is a powerful deterrent to public interest journalism. Fairfax and News Limited stood ready to prove every one of the things we wrote, but it took 4 expensive years even to get to the door of the court. Then, but for the good sense of the judge, it might have taken 18 months more. We will receive nothing back from the investment of hundreds of thousands of dollars spent preparing our case. Lesser organisations or individuals, once their research revealed how litigious she is, may have pulled back from publishing a story that was clearly in the public interest." End quote. This again goes to Carly's strength in publishing her book.
Pretty much from the time I came out, I realised, you know, I had hit rock bottom. There was only one way, and that was up. I had no money, no career. You know, I was rebuilding my whole life and that of my 3 children. And I guess the phrase that keeps coming to me is the truth hurts, and I don't have to do anything to hurt other than tell the truth. And I'm able to do that because of the judgment in our favour. I am absolutely not fearful of her in any respect, because what I've got in my book is the complete truth. And you know, no matter what happens, I've got that, you know, and truth does bring you freedom. I know that, yeah, going through the courts and bringing evidence to the table and the truth, that's ultimately what will win and bring justice.
To finish off this episode, I asked Carly if there was anything we hadn't talked about that she wanted to say. And I'll leave you with her words here.
It's really important for society in general to realise that cult members and ex-cult members are not idiots, they're not crazy, that getting involved with a destructive cult group can happen to anyone. If you're in the wrong place at the wrong time and you're in a vulnerable situation in your life, whether it be if you might be sick or have just broken up with someone or divorced, you know, in that transition from university to the real world, etc., it can happen to anyone. And yeah, just to look out for the warning signs and to try and do something about a situation in the early stage, because before long you could have lost your loved one for a long time. And you know, it's not nice to be scary and make statements like that, but you know, these cults are extremely dangerous, destructive situations, and you don't want any of your loved ones getting caught up in one.
Carly McConkie's book, The Cult Effect, is available via Amazon and Booktopia, and you can find the links to both on her website, carlymcconkie.com, which is CarlyMcConkey.com. The links are also available on our website, and you should definitely have a read if you found this episode interesting and would like to know more. A big thanks to Carly for her time and openness in speaking to me for this episode. If you have an experience that you'd like to share on Let's Talk About Sects, I'd love to hear from you at ltaspod@gmail.com. If you'd like to support this podcast, I've recently launched a Patreon page, which you can find at patreon.com/ltaspod. There are no supporters yet, so you could be first. Is that exciting? I'm not sure. If 25 people contribute $1 a month, it will cover my current hosting fees for the show. If you've been personally affected by involvement in a cult, or would like to support those who have been, you can find support or donate to Cult Information and Family Support if you're in Australia via www.cifs.org.au. And you can find resources outside of Australia with the International Cultic Studies Association via www.icsahome.com. Let's Talk About Sects is researched and presented by me, Sarah Steele. Sound design and music is by Joe Gould. All information sources are listed on our website at ltaspod.com. Thanks again for listening, and hope you can join me next month.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.